After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to another Baseball America Prospect Handbook podcast. JJ Cooper, Matt Eddy here today. We're back because we started with the NL East, now we're going to the NL Central. For every time we finish putting out a list of all of our top 10s for division, Matt and I are doing a draft. We're going to take away the number ones. We had a couple questions about that, I saw on Twitter. The number ones are off the board here. We'll briefly touch on them, but the idea is looking a little more deeper into this, not which number one do you rank the best. But looking at the number ones real quick as we're jumping right into this. If the number ones were part of this, who's getting taken number one?
If it's me, I'm still taking Oscar Tavares.
Same here.
Our number two preseason guy. Big lefty bat, field to hit, plus power. Profile right fielder.
I think, and we won't say this time. Last time with the NL East, we said all of the number ones would go off the board before the first number two. That's not true here.
Nope.
That's not true. That's not even close to true. Jimmy Nelson, Brewers number one, I think would be around pick 8, 9, or 10 of this draft, at best, I think is probably safe to say.
I think so.
I mean, Robert Stevenson, Gregory Polanco, Javier Baez, Oscar Tavares, those guys would probably, I think, all go in the top 6 or 7 picks at the most.
Yeah, maybe top 5.
Maybe they would be that, but Jimmy Nelson doesn't fit in that. But again, the rules that we go by with this is we're taking the number ones off the board. But after that, anyone in the top 10s are available, these little dream drafts we do. And we're looking at long-term, what you're saying is, okay, if we looked at these teams, not what they're going to do this year, but what we're talking about is, who would you rather have over essentially the totality of career, over the next 6 major league years and beyond and all that. But so I get the first pick this time. Matt had the first pick last time. And I think it's a pretty easy first pick.
It is.
Chris Bryant was... oh, so close to being the number one prospect in the Cubs system. I think you really can say it was 1A and 1B. In the end, John, we both talked to John about this. John Manuel wrote our Cubs top 10. In the end, Javier Baez hitting 37 homers as a 20-year-old while playing shortstop and doing half that damage in Double-A ended up edging out an amazing first pro season, an amazing college season for Bryant. But you've got one guy who's playing shortstop and is going to, if he can't stay there, is going to slide over to third, versus another guy who plays third now and may have to slide to the outfield. I think that ended up being kind of the differentiating factor. Baez being number one is my game because I get to pick first. I'm taking Bryant and some of the best power in the minors, easy pick for the first pick.
Well, here's the question. What if Bryant had ranked number one? Is Baez still 1-1 for you in this draft?
Yeah, I'm taking Baez then.
Okay.
I'm taking Baez. If you were worried about Baez, you want to see him. He's got to cut down the errors, but that's fine. That's true of a lot of young shortstops. And you want to see a little bit more plate discipline, a little less swing. I don't mind even the swing and miss, but you'd like to see a few more walks to go with the swing and miss. Pitchers have to respect him. They respect his power. Right now, he's so aggressive that he doesn't take some walks that are given to him. But I'm nitpicking, because really, I'd love to have Javier. I'd be quite happy having Javier Baez as the number one pick as well. Would that be true for you, too?
Yes.
Okay. So that makes it a little tougher. Now Matt's got the number two pick, and there are a couple of good options at number two.
There are. And I'm going to go with Jameson Taillon, the Pirates right-hander. I'm going to trust the profile. He hasn't dominated in the minor leagues maybe to the extent that you'd expect, given his repertoire. But 6'6", right-hander, with 2-plus pitches, pretty good feel for a kid out of high school. I mean, he and Josh Beckett are the only right-handers to go 2 overall in a draft, high school right-handers, since, I don't know, the last 25 years. So he's a pretty special talent, and I'll give him a spin here.
Yeah, and his, you're right, his numbers have been good, not in, sensational. The one thing, if you're a Pirates fan, that jumps out a little bit is that somewhat can be said also of Garrett Cole before he hit the big leagues.
That's fair.
And Cole's actually been really better in the big leagues than he was for much of his minor league career.
Yeah, it's a different profile for Tyone. Right. There's no 80s on his scorecard, but you know, a couple 60s, maybe 65s.
Third pick, I'm going back to the Cubs.
All right.
C.J. Edwards. C.J. Edwards, skinny, very skinny right-hander, but a skinny right-hander with plus stuff and to go with it, excellent feel. The thing that we probably kept track of, one of the stats we kept track of most this season was every time C.J. Edwards pitched, I wanted to see, did he give up a homer? And I mean that because it was like, what, 150 pro innings before he ever gave up a home run?
It was after the trade to the Cubs, I believe. Yeah. It was in high A.
He never gave up a home run as a Ranger. It's a pretty amazing, just a pretty amazing package. The only real blemishes with him, the concerns all revolve around, is he going to be able to hold up as with that skinny frame and all? He's not a guy, he has a frame, but a lot of people think he's not going to add weight, really, because it's just that kind of, Oil Cam Boyd never added weight. Right. That just kind of
frame. Slender shoulders.
Slender shoulders. It's not something where you say, just wait till he, you know, fills out. No, this very well may be the body he has. That being said, I'll take it, and I'm quite happy to take it. So we're now back to Matt with pick number 4.
Okay, I'm going to take another right-handed pitcher. I'm going to take Carlos Martinez of the Cardinals. Now, here's a guy where you can point to a couple 70s. And
I was going to say really, fastball maybe an 80.
Maybe an 80.
It's 99 is best.
You wonder if he ever will go back into the rotation, but even if he doesn't... You
know, on your team, is he in the rotation?
I don't know. I think you would definitely have to exhaust that possibility because his control is actually pretty good for a Latin right-hander who throws as hard as he does. So, I mean, like Edwards, you worry about the durability. He's not a big guy, but I would probably give him a spin in the rotation. I don't know what the Cardinals are going to do, but he's my pick at number 2.
Okay, so for the 5th pick, my 3rd pick, I'm going back to the Pirates.
Pirates.
I think this does not surprise you because I'm a big Tyler Glasnow fan. Probably the biggest in the office. I did the Sally League list. Really enjoy kind of watching him pitch. He is the ceiling pick. I'm probably going to come back a little bit less risk coming forward, but he's the high ceiling, high risk. He's only pitched an A-ball. He didn't even qualify. I've told this story probably on the podcast before, but he didn't qualify for any league leader list or minor league leader list
right. Because...
Even though he really didn't miss time, because of his control problems at times, he was only going for, you know, 3, 4, 5 innings. So he ended up 2/3 of an inning short of what he needed to qualify. That being said, if he had, that 142 average against would have blown away anyone else in the minors. No one else in the minors was within 35 points of that. And no one, there have been very few pitchers in the minors in the last 10 years who've come close to limiting hitters. The stat jumps out. 54 hits allowed in 111 innings. Now, he also did allow 61 walks. But
I was going to say, if you turn 3 of his walks into just outs in play, he qualifies for the ERA title.
Yeah, and but I'm not as surprised with that because, again, he's 6'7". He's a 6'7" pitcher who doesn't have a whole lot of innings under his belt. I expect right now what you're seeing is like, as you watch him pitch, it's like locates, loses it. And when he loses on pitch, sometimes it's like, okay, the catcher's jumping up to get it. He can't repeat the delivery every time out, every pitch. And that's really, to me, not that surprising for a young 6 foot, very long levered 6'7" pitcher. But those long levers also are part of what's going to make him really tough to hit because, for one, his extension means that the ball's coming out from a lot closer, it feels like. And when he's locating, he can also get, he can elevate, and he can get excellent downhill playing with, by the way, a plus fastball.
Yeah, you know, Alex Meyer is not in this division, but he's somebody who's kind of keeping an eye out for the same reasons.
Meyer's even a little taller than Glasnow, but the thing I come back to is that Glasnow is, I feel like he's not where Meyer is. Meyer's in, you know, pitching double A now. But at Meyer, at Glasnow's age, his location was way worse, I feel like, than Glasnow's was. But good point. Yeah, good guy to bring up.
Yeah, if you talked on the podcast about just the history of really tall pitchers in the majors.
No, I think it's an interesting...
And how we couldn't find anybody who was really quite like Glasnow, could we?
It was really hard.
The guys who are taller than 6'6 or so are guys like John Rausch. We should come back with more info on this.
Right, we looked at it. I remember sitting down at Clint's desk and we were looking at it, and it was hard to find a whole lot of analogs to it because...
A lot of relievers.
But the guy you always come back to, but he's really the outlier, is he always, you know, and Ty Glasnow is not as big as him and he throws right-handed, but is Randy Johnson. Like, Randy Johnson was a guy who, not that Tyler Glasnow is going to become Randy Johnson, but that's your best case scenario from the standpoint of Randy Johnson's control was like, okay, doesn't have it, it's getting a little better. And really, it was in his late 20s that is really the point where Johnson, it started to click in for him as far as being able to locate. And by the time he was in his mid-30s, he really had pretty good control.
He's just a freak.
Yeah, but he's an outlier. It's like saying
the best super tall pitcher in the majors today is probably Doug Fister. He's 6'8", I believe.
Yeah.
So, but that's a completely different pitch profile from Glasnow.
Right. And the funny thing is Fister's probably, if you said which pitcher in the big leagues who's had success was least heralded, he didn't make a top 30, you know, coming up for us. And you look back at it, like, yeah, he should have. I mean, in hindsight, you know, we'll say, okay, you know, we want to be perfect. We're not perfect on this. But in hindsight, there weren't a whole lot of years where he was really that close. And it all seemed to come. He is a guy who it came together a little bit. He was a pitcher, but it did get better and better as he kind of learned his body. So, a nice little Tyler Glasnow digression, but that puts the ball back in your court, Matt.
Okay, I think I'm going to go back to the Cubs and take center fielder Albert Almora, who ranked number 4 on this list. Kind of a risky pick, good performance prospect, but, you know, it's not a guy with pluses on his scorecard, though he is regarded as a plus defensive center fielder.
Even with...
And the numbers bore that out this year. He recorded a ton of putouts.
Even with, yeah, I was going to say speed. His speed is not exceptional, but his defense and center is.
Mm-hmm. Which, it's a very strange combination.
It's one of those, I mean, you hear it, but it is true with him. The jumps, he just gets really good jumps, and the best way to put it is there's a lot of really speedy center fielders who, okay, yeah, but if your first two steps are in the wrong direction, you don't cover, I mean, that cuts the amount of ground you cover very significantly.
Yeah, so there's a lot of risk here because there's no carrying tool, so he could be reserve profile as he moves up, but for now, he looks good in low A. I'm taking him.
And I do think long term for him, he's in a perfect organization for him to develop. In that, if the Cubs hitters develop like they should, we just talked about Bryant. We're going to probably talk about Jorge Soler, you know, in a minute. If those guys develop like they should, they're not going to ask him. You're not talking about a guy who's asked to bet 3-hole, 4-hole, 5-hole.
Yeah.
He ideally for them is going to be the perfect, you know, top or maybe the two-hole hitter.
Like a right-handed hitting David DeJesus type of guy, almost, but a better defensive player.
Right, a center, an
on-base geared center fielder.
An on-base geared center fielder who's a lot, you know, hit 300, 370, 425. I mean, that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And scores a lot of runs. Not gonna steal a ton of bases, but no, I think you look at it, you add it all up, and it's a pretty good package. But it is something that it's not your traditional when you think of elite prospects.
Yeah, there's definitely some other guys I was looking at, but I like Almora.
Okay, now I'm going to go with another one of the...
Is it a cheese ball?
I don't know. Billy Hamilton's too out there to be a cheese ball. And I have some concerns about his bat, you know. But I am going to go Billy Hamilton, there's no one on my little fake team here. There's no one I'm going to enjoy watching more. I'll put it that way. He is the most fun guy I've watched on a baseball field. Well, no.
So does Nixon.
No. I take that back. Byron Buxton's the most fun. He's second in a long time. You know, and there's some other guys who've been really fun. Watching Joey Gallo play a game is as fun as watching Joey Gallo take BP.
Yeah.
Joey Gallo BP is just one of those experiences that has to be, you know, you have to see it to believe it. But I'm going to take Hamilton. one of the things I like is you know, we got Billy Hamilton OF here, you know, outfielder. It really, he's an outfield. I think at this point you really could consider him, he's an outfield second baseman. I know he hasn't played a whole lot of second base, but mm-hmm. I've said it before on, you know, on Twitter, JJCoop36. If the Reds trade Brandon Phillips, I think there's a pretty decent chance that Hamilton will play a lot of games at second base for them next year, in part because the Reds don't have almost any other options at second base, and in part because I think they have other, even on the team right now, they have, if they didn't make any other moves, they have other center. Chris Heisey could play center field for them. Hamilton's big concern when it comes to him defensively when he was in the infield was he has a really low arm slot for a shortstop. It meant his accuracy of his throws a lot of times was not there. Well, that's not nearly as much a problem at second base.
And make the runners slide early. They're double plays.
Right. You know, and the reality of it is that I think offensively he has the same, you know, he's the same, going to be the same guy either way. But I do think second base is a position where if he puts the same lineup that he does, if he's a above average second baseman defensively mm-hmm. or an above average center fielder, there's not a whole lot of difference there as to how much value he's giving you defensively.
It comes one step closer to fulfilling my prophecy of him being Luis Castillo.
That's a little closer. I the thing that always I want to give credit on this before is talking to Lino DeShields, his manager, really for 2 years in Dayton and then the next year in Bakersfield. And Delano DeShields, who was a shortstop, who moved to second base, saying, I think long-term this guy's a second baseman. And the reason I say that is I think it really will unlock his ability offensively in a lot of ways, too, because it did that for me. Once I got off a shortstop, Delano DeShields said, second base, way easier. Knock the ball down, throw it to first. Whereas in shortstop, you're the quarterback of the infield. You know, every play is tough and all that. He's like, I just can't, you know, I think long-term this guy's a second baseman. Maybe that won't be, maybe, I mean, he's going to be potentially gold glove center fielder or maybe an above-average second baseman. But
he's like the opposite of Almora. I mean, there's pluses on there that you're not concerned that his tools won't play. His speed and his defense will play in the majors.
Right.
There's no question about it.
We've already seen that. Like, it is different. September 40-man, you know, roster expanded baseball is different than regular, you know, than the normal grind of baseball. But that being said, right then you saw already how many guys can impact a game. Like, you say, okay, we've all seen a lot of fast guys come through the game, and the reality is that you go, okay, well, that guy actually isn't as valuable as maybe thought. This is a rare case in that his speed actually does make a significant impact on the game. Mm-hmm. And there aren't many guys who can say that about.
Yeah, I remember Tom Cotchman saying that in the Pioneer League in
2010? Was he in the Pioneer League? 29? Oh, 2010. No, he was a second rounder in 2009. Played GCL that year.
In 2010.
Yeah, so yep. 2010.
Yep. Okay.
So back to Matt.
I'm going back to the Cubs. Jorge Soler.
This is still, I mean... And I really thought about taking Soler for my last pick. You're going with the Soler could end up being a significantly better player than Hamilton. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more risk there, I think.
Oh, there's a ton of risk, but the tools are profile right field tools. You know, I don't think anybody, you know, as John is fond of saying, the Cubs have 380 raw power prospects in Soler, Bryant, and Javier Baez,
and a 70 raw I think in Dan Vogelbach as well.
There you go. But I'm going to take Soler. You know, he's got half a season in High A. He's got some makeup questions, but I think the bat potential is too loud to ignore.
No, I can see that, and if that all works out, I mean, he's not Yasiel Puig.
No, he's not.
But
is he Cespedes?
But I guess the thing I was going to come back to is that a year ago, there wasn't thought to be a massive separation of the two. They're both prototype right fielders. If at all the tools come together. The thing that Soler doesn't have is that the extreme athleticism that mm-hmm. Puig has. Soler's not turning in four flats to first, you know, 405s. I was going to say, but then you can all make a joke. Yeah, you're getting 4.3s, 4.4s for Soler because sometimes it's like, I had a scout say, like, running to first base, you know, seemed like it was a chore to him.
It was optional.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the concern with right. Soler.
Yeah, I agree.
At this point, there are still some really solid guys to pick on the board. I'm going Philip Ervin next.
Okay.
This may be because I do the Reds list. But I really...
I thought about him.
I really have pretty strong convictions that Philip Irvin's going to hit. I don't have much worry about that. If you... No, again, I'll give the disclaimer. You've heard it before if you listen to the podcast. I'm not a scout. I don't pretend to be one. That being said, we've all been around the game a long time. We've talked to scouts about these things. Philip Irvin has a very simple swing. It's very direct. It's with excellent hand-eye, and he has some power. And Philip Irvin has produced with that swing. Philip Irvin's hit over 300 pretty much everywhere that he's gone and picked up a bat. He did it as a freshman. He then went summer league, did it. He did it as a sophomore. He went to the Cape, and he was a Cape League MVP. He did it as a junior. Then he goes to the Reds. He does it at two levels with the Reds. Everywhere Philip Irvin's ever gone, he's hit. You can have some questions. The concern I have with Philip Irvin is also everywhere that Philip Irvin's gone, he's gotten hurt. It's often a minor injury, but he's had very few times in his career where he's been 100% healthy. To his credit, a lot of times he plays through the injury. But like with the Reds, they never this summer saw he had an ankle problem that he had when he signed. Then he had a wrist problem at the end of the year. You know, he had some hamstring problems. They said, we didn't see always the speed that we think's in there because he was battling these injuries. That's the only concern I really have. You want to see long term, okay, is he a center fielder whose range was a little bit diminished this year because of the injuries? Or is he going to end up being a corner? I think he has enough arm to play right field. Well, he's not going to do the Reds probably unless for several years with Jay Bruce out there. But that's my concern with him is where is he going to play? Because if he's a center fielder, the rest of his tools, if he's a center fielder and can really play center field, the rest of his tools become really loud. If he's a corner, then it still could be very solid. But if he's a 300 hitter with some pop, that looks a lot better as a center fielder than it does as a right fielder.
Yeah.
Okay, now back to Matt.
Okay, I'm going to kind of balance out the risk of the Soler selection and take Colton Wong, second baseman of the Cardinals. Like Almora, you're not going to see any 60s on his card. But this year he did add speed to his portfolio. I think he went 21 for 22 on steals, if I'm not mistaken.
And
20 for 21. And he's got good plate discipline, lefty bat, enough glove to play second.
Yeah, a very solid, unspectacular guy is the way to put it. I mean, I think sometimes people think because he was a first-round pick, oh, this guy, you know, has stardom written on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's really a whole lot of stardom there. I don't think there's any expectation of it. It's much more that he's going to be a solid big league regular. That leads me to my next pick, which I'm going to go off a guy who I think is a little riskier but has more upside second base. Arizmendi Alcantara. This is the first time that we've gone outside the order.
Mm-hmm.
Arizmendi Alcantara is number 7 on the Cubs list. Pierce Johnson 6. Maybe we may see him picked in a minute. But I really am an Alcantara fan. I think that he has more power than the average middle infielder. Combines with, you know, I love the fact switch hitter, and a legit switch hitter, not someone who, you know, who switch hits and just can't hit one side, but he can hit the other. I think he's better second base long term than shortstop. Although I think if you had to, you could play him at shortstop. They're not going to have to with the Cubs. But I think he's pretty close to ready to be. I think he ends up being kind of a top of the order hitter. You know, because he's a second baseman, I think a lot of traditional managers say, "Hey, you're a two hole hitter." I think he could be that. I think he could lead off. He stole 31 bags this year, hit 15 homers in Double A. You're talking about a guy who's going to play all next year as a 22-year-old, and really may make the majors as a 22-year-old. I'm a big Arizmendi Alcantara fan.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I kind of got bogged down by the numbers on the Cubs, seeing Pierce Johnson in between. But
so you're having your buyer's remorse?
Buyer's remorse. I think I'd rather have Alcantara than Wong.
Well, back to you. You get to make up for that.
How many more picks we got?
Let's see. So that's... Let's do two more rounds.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like there's still... you know what we're going to do? We're going to keep picking until we pick a brewer.
Oh, man. Okay.
That may be a little while, but continue.
Okay. I'm going back to the Cardinals. I'm taking Stephen Piscotty, right fielder, finished the year in Double A. It's somewhat similar to Soler, but not as explosive and a little more fundamentally sound. He's got pretty good juice. Not the 30 home run potential Soler has, but good bet to be an on base, good arm.
Okay.
Just solid hitter.
That's one I would not. I would. He would be on my board a little while longer. If I'm looking at, if I'm looking at outfielders, and there's some question about his defense. I'll save that because I'm not picking him yet.
Not picking him yet.
And I may take him. I may take him in a minute. I'm going back to the Cubs. I'm taking Pierce Johnson my next pick.
Okay.
I did flip it the last one, but I do think Pierce Johnson. It was very fun watching him pitch this year. He knows what he's doing with really some very solid stuff. Him and Edwards are very important to the Cubs' development because they don't have a whole lot of arms in that system, especially potentially starters. I think Johnson will be ready to do that before too long. I think that he's a guy who very solid. I think he's probably a 3-4 down the road, but a pretty good likelihood of reaching that. And so I'm pretty happy with him as adding him to the Cooperstown bound.
Yeah.
Back to you.
Okay, now it's getting a little dicier.
So we've got Austin Meadows still on the board. I know that's not your kind of pick. Nick Kingham.
Well, actually, I was thinking of taking Meadows next. My third corner outfielder to go with Piscotty and Soler. I'll take Meadows. Left-handed hitting first-round pick of the Pirates this year. The scary thing is he's got kind of a rough Jeremy Hermita profile.
But the funny thing is like, Jeremy Hermita is a guy I could never explain why it all fell apart. Like, I've never had a good explanation for it. Like, Jeremy Hermita was the two guys, like, Ben Grieve, at least I've heard explanations for. But Jeremy Hermita arrived at the big leagues as a highly touted prospect, produced, and then it all fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you ever heard a good explanation for what happened with Hermita?
I guess not. I mean, just if you're not going to hit for big time power, the pitchers are going to challenge you more.
But
like such a big part of his game is just his walk rate in the minors.
It's funny. I still need to answer this. I got a question from someone a couple days ago on Twitter, and I've not gotten around to answering. I apologize about that. But it was a question that said, "How sure are you about Oscar Tavares' hit tool?" And the answer I've thought about, I haven't written down yet, is, I mean, about as sure to me. Oscar Tavares' hit tool is about as sure thing as I would put him as. In my personal opinion, the second safest hit tool in the minors, and the one I put ahead of him is Byron Buxton, who, you could really argue that Tavares has a safer hit tool. He's produced all the way up to AAA.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the caveat to that is that Jeremy Hermita was an extremely safe hit tool when he hit the big leagues. I mean, like, that was what he did. He hit for average, he got on base, and it fell apart for him. You could never say with 100% certainty for anyone. There's always things you can't, unexpected things can happen. I see what you're saying, though. Like, that profile does get a little bit concerning. The thing that Meadows did do this year, that we'll have to see if he continues, didn't hit for power at all as an amateur in his senior year, and then really did hit for power as a pro. Mm-hmm. So we have to see, can he keep that up? I mean, 7 home runs, 5 of which come in the GCL. 5 home runs in the GCL will put you among the league leaders.
Yeah, it was a great debut.
So, I'm glad you took him, though, because then I can take Jesse Winker, who, again, is another outfielder who I feel pretty confident about his hit tool. Jesse Winker can hit. He can get on base. He can hit for average and get on base. He has some pop. He likes to go opposite field.
Right.
Really, the concern with him is he a below-average left fielder? In another organization, maybe he ends up being a first baseman. Not going to happen when your first baseman signed through, the next sometime in the 22nd century. It's not going to happen with the Reds. But I really feel, again, quite comfortable about his ability to hit, and that is the most important part of being, especially a position player at a hit first position. So I'm quite happy with the Winker pick. Are you going Brewers yet?
Maybe I should, just so we can end this. But the question is, which Brewer? Do you take the tooled up center fielder in low A, or do you take the 2012 first-round sup pick who got up to high A this year?
I hate to say it, but
didn't hit very well.
I hate to say it. If I'm looking at it right now, Nick Kingham or Alan Hansen, if I can have a middle infielder who has some significant tools, I'm not going the Brewer route yet.
Yeah, you're probably right. Maybe I'll save the Brewer pick to my next one. And just go ahead and take Kingham here. Continue the run on Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, again, solid, very... He's not a Glasnow, he's not a Tyone, but he's a very nice complimentary piece to fit in because he's not that far away from the big leagues. And you throw that in with, you know, I could see him being a number... I could see him being a very solid member of the Pirates rotation in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Is he... far behind Pierce Johnson for you? Are they different classes? Are they very similar?
No, I think they're similar. I think you could argue maybe that Johnson has a little bit more ceiling, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it's a whole lot of different. I think his fastball is a little firmer. I think that his breaking ball maybe a little bit sharper. But Kingham may have a little bit more feel for pitch.
Probably better health track record, too.
Yeah, that too. So, you take Kingham. I'm coming back. I'm taking Alan Hansen. I like my infield, to be honest. I don't know if Hansen really, I've probably got a couple too many second basemen. Because I got Brian at third. I've got Alcantara at second. And that means probably Alan Hansen playing shortstop in my little fictional team here. But I think maybe he ends up being a second baseman long term. I do think he's going to be a regular. I think it's a pretty safe bet he's going to be a regular. And I think it's funny, like, if you went rewound the clock just a little over a year and a half ago, he was the guy who was having the breakout season in West Virginia. I know, yeah, by the way, there was this Polanco guy over there who was pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, the scouts told us right from then.
Yeah.
Polanco was the guy to watch.
Polanco was the guy. I remember when I was doing mid-season top 50 stuff, and it was like... Even then, you had a couple of scouts who were like, maybe I'm crazy, but to me, Gregory Polanco is a top 50 prospect in the game right now. And we ended up putting him on the list of, you know, let's just hold on a little bit longer. Because really, Polanco had not produced before last year, and this was essentially he had 2 months of production. Now we don't have any real concerns about that. Polanco is a top 20 prospect at least. But Hansen still is a very intriguing prospect in his own right. They traded away Dilson Herrera last year in the Marlon Byrd trade. I think in part because they could trade away Dilson Herrera, who's a solid prospect in his own right, but without any huge concerns because Alan Hansen's better.
Mm-hmm. And more advanced presently.
Yeah, yeah. And really, a little bit of time in AA last year. He's going to need to probably go back there this year. But by 2015, he you could see him in Pittsburgh. So, back to you. Are you going Brewer?
Well, you just took Hansen, and I just took Kingham, and there's still a couple more interesting Pirates on here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Josh Bell and Reese McGuire are both.
In good faith, I don't know that I could take, at this position, a Brewer.
I think, if you're putting Josh Bell versus Tyrone Taylor or Mitch Haniger, I think you got it. I mean, Bell's upside's bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take Josh Bell, the... switch-hitting center fielder for low A who set a second-round bonus record in the 2011 draft that will never be broken.
No, I guess theoretically it could, but it would be someone who would have to basically build their entire draft just around signing a second-round pick, which makes no sense at all. None.
So, you know, he's got a mulligan year in 2012. He was injured. And last year he was fairly good. I don't know that the tools jump off the page, but I think he's a good all-around player. Probably not a center fielder. I think that's the consensus.
Yeah, given his knee trouble. He didn't play it. I mean, they had Barrett Barnes out there in West Virginia.
All right, so I was wrong about that, but it's another corner outfielder for the pile.
And the Pirates in the long term, it's fascinating. I mean, it's... Okay, so you're going to add Polanco at some point before too long. Mm-hmm. So then you're going to have three legit center fielders playing in the outfield for the Pirates, where you're going to have Marte... McCutchen and Polanco. Polanco play right, I'm surely. Marte will play left. And then, long term, you're going to have add to that, if everything goes the way they hope, you're going to add Austin Meadows and Josh Bell. That's going to be...
And Harold Ramirez,
who's a long ways away. But so now, if we're looking, let me check my Cubs list here again. You know, I think we have hit the point where I could take a Brewer. Our choices are, you could look at taking Dan Vogelbach, Jaime Pinolario with the Cubs. You could take Yorman Rodriguez, Michael Lorenzen with the Reds. Our options, you know, Reese McGuire with the Pirates, but a catcher in his first full year, even with good, that's a risky, a very risky approach. You could go Marco Gonzalez, a pretty a left-hander should move pretty quickly. I do think at this point I can take Tyrone Taylor.
Woo.
I'm taking Tyrone Taylor. So I think Tyrone Taylor could be a pretty interesting prospect. You know, when I was doing Midwest League, the Midwest League top 20, he didn't make. He was a guy who you found a lot of guys who liked him. Now they didn't; they weren't blown away with him, but they liked him.
Mm-hmm.
Had a great couple of months in the middle of the season. Tailed off a little bit. It felt like at the end of the year, but can play center field. You know, he fits. I'll put it this way. If, you know, you believe he's a regular center fielder, you know, a center fielder defensively, there's not a whole lot of separation between him and Philip Irvin. I like Philip Irvin because Philip Irvin has a bigger track record of hitting, and I think Philip Irvin has a little bit more power. But there's not, I mean, that's not like there's this gaping canyon. But, so I guess, though, I pick first. So that means you get to pick again. So another I don't get
brewer.
One more.
Another Brewer?
Another Brewer, or are you going... Marco Gonzalez or Reese McGuire or Yorman Rodriguez, Michael Lorenzen, or are you going Mitch Haniger? Jaime Candelario, Dan Vogelbach.
We can talk about the merits of Yorman and Haniger. But, you know, I think at this point I would probably shoot the moon for McGuire to get the lefty hitting catcher without a lot of defensive questions, you know. He's a long way from the majors, but you know, there's a reason he went in the first round, and he's always been pretty well regarded from the defensive standpoint.
So to recap...
Which allows him to work on some of the subtler aspects, mm-hmm. game calling and working on his hitting.
Right, and we said catchers don't get freaked out at all if Reese McGuire is hitting 200 2 months of the season next year. There's a whole lot that catchers have to deal with. I mean, just really don't. I mean, that's... Catchers just take a long time to develop at the plate. If he's hitting 300, okay, get pretty excited. To recap, so we took six Cubs, all the way down to number seven, Arsmendi Alcantara.
Good system.
Three Reds, a Brewer. Sorry, we took a brief break there. We just found out about me breaking Randall Grytrek trade. I'm doing the Angels top 30, and... I admit I'm a little bit stunned right now because it was going to be hard to find 30 as it was. It just took away my number two prospect. It's going to be even a little harder. But going back to it, we took seven Pirates. Cubs and Pirates list are really pretty stacked.
Really good.
Three Cardinals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really stands out. I mean, I think that, again, this is what this exercise is about. I think we both agree. The Cubs and the Pirates have the two best farm systems in the Central, and it's not even close. Again, that's nothing. If you're a Cardinals fan, don't feel too bad about it. The reason yours is not at that level is, oh yeah, by the way, six of your seven top seven from last year's list contributed in the big leagues this year significantly.
These are the guys on the 25 and under list who are still 25 and under. Michael Wacha, Shelby Miller, Trevor Rosenthal, Matt Adams, and Joe Kelly. Yeah, Joe Kelly. So,
and Kevin Segrist.
And Kevin Segrist. Six members of your World Series roster are still younger than 25. And the first one to be ARB eligible will be Rosenthal? I don't know.
Yeah, Rosenthal. Oh,
Kelly. Kelly's got a couple of years.
Yeah, you're right, Kelly. But, whew. And we've talked about it, you know, I did an SBA about it not that long ago. Their pitching, their young pitching depth is insane. You know, we talk about Carlos Martinez. Will he start? Will he leave? There are many organizations where you would be penciling Carlos Martinez in as a number three starter for next year and feeling pretty good about it, saying, look, okay, there are concerns about his, you know, his build and all, but this guy's big league ready, and they may not be saying it publicly, but in the back of their mind they're thinking, he's a lot better than a lot of these other starters we have. We expect him to really be our number three. You look at it with the Cardinals and you say, unless they trade some guys, he doesn't fit in their rotation. They don't have room for him. Now, you're going to have injuries at some point, but when you talk about a rotation that starts with Wainwright, that at this point, Michael Wacha, after what he did, you're very comfortable thinking of him as a number 2-3. Mm-hmm. Shelby Miller was a Rookie of the Year candidate in a normal year. Mm-hmm. It was a great year for rookies in the NL. In a normal year, if you said 2013 Rookie of the Year Shelby Miller, looking at the year he had, that would not have seemed outlandish in any way, shape, or form. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, he was a very solid starter for a full season. Mm-hmm. Didn't even pitch in the big playoffs, basically. But, you know, you've got them.
Jaime Garcia, if he's healthy.
Jaime Garcia, who they really need back because he's the only lefty of this group.
Yeah, he's good. And Joe Kelly's probably going to get in the rotation.
Right. And really, you think that Lance Lynn probably is going to get... You have to think he's getting traded in this offseason.
Could be. So then the Cardinals could do something interesting with Martinez and try to look at him as a starter for 2015 by just giving him multi-inning work. But nobody manages that way anymore.
Other idea is what about giving him multi-inning work and you think by the end of the season...
He's in the rotation.
Come September, we'll put in the rotation and he'll be fresh, relatively fresh, and we'll say, come out there and blow him away for, you know, five innings. Because that's the other thing. They've got a bullpen where they can say, okay, especially if you've got Wainwright, Waka, Carlos Martinez is a perfect kind of guy to pitch in game three or game four of a playoff series. Mm-hmm. Because you've got, at that point, a pretty rested pen, probably, and you say, okay, here you go. Whew. It's a good situation. Again, there are several organizations who right now are in really good situations. I know Cubs fans are probably very frustrated with the amount of wins they're getting at the big league level. It's not that far away from this team being very interesting to watch, and then we'll have to see if they can get enough pitching to become not just interesting to watch, but successful. That being said, the track record of these guys who are running things leads you to believe that they should have some success down the road. Mm-hmm. But, well, that's our NL Central Top 10 Dream Draft podcast. We'll be back with the NL West in a couple of weeks. Probably right after the winter meetings, we'll be doing that.
Go Padres.
I'm still a little stunned by losing Randall Gratchek from my Angels top 10. That was the number 2, and it was a drop-off pretty quick after that. Oh, man. But thanks again for the listen. Thanks for the download. I hope you're enjoying these Dream Draft ones. You got any questions about them, feel free to ask. You're now at Matt Eddie BA.
Yes.
And I'm at JJCoop36, or you also can send emails. I'll ask you on the podcast as well. If you've got a question that you want to ask, I'm always looking for questions at askba@baseballamerica.com. Just ask askba@baseballamerica.com. Include your name and your hometown. I love to get questions on that. We answer so probably on a 2-week cycle right now because of I still have 3 top 30s to write for the handbook. But I'm working on another one of those for next week. So get your questions in for that, and I'll look forward to answering some of those. Thanks for the download. We will talk to you next week.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money.